Redline.
The Lumen-Ukrainian crisis was in the focus of the world's media for another week, while international mediators were struggling to bring Ukrainian authorities and representatives of self-proclaimed Donetsk and Luhansk People's Republics to the new round of talks in Belarus, capital of Minsk. New Ukrainian government of Prime Minister Arseniy Yatsenyuk unveiled its development strategy for the years 2015 and 2016. Despite the Ukrainian economy currently finding itself on the brink of bankruptcy, the new cabinet calls one of its priorities building a border wall with Russia. Ironically, it is planned to be erected 25 years after the demise of the Berlin Wall and will be called Eurowall. And that's what we're going to discuss in our second section, Between the Lines. The bizarre project is described in a Newsweek article. Ukraine's border wall with Russia will cost over $500 million, written by Polly Mossens. And here's a quote for you. Ukraine has put together both a timeline and a budget for a major project meant to secure its independence from Russia, a wall. The wall will take as long as 4 years to build. The wall will be 1,426 miles long on the border between Ukraine and Russia. For additional security, a ditch will be dug around the wall, 4 meters wide and 2 meters deep. Surveillance towers and electrical systems will also be installed throughout the barrier for monitoring purposes. And according to the author, while Ukrainian officials are working to solidify wall logistics, some international officials have spoken out against the plan. Council of Europe Secretary-General Thorbjorn Jagland called the wall unacceptable.
Well, Julia, really, Ukraine is surprising. One surprise after another. So, as you know, in history we had many walls. We had Great Chinese Wall, we had Berlin Wall. But I personally had a feeling that in globally interdependent world, there should be no place for walls. And then all of a sudden we see that Ukraine is planning to erect wall on the border with Russia. Okay, you may not like Russian government, but governments come and go. But if you erect a wall, this is for years and years, this is for decades. Then what is the logic behind that? I simply don't understand. I really believe that this is a sheer populist, and obviously that will poison the relations. But I still believe that this is just a project, that it would never turn into a reality.
Well, let's ask some questions for our guest. First of all, let's go to Kirill Koktish, Associate Professor at Moscow State Institute of International Relations with Russia's foreign minister, who joins us in our studio. So, of course, with this wall and the plans to build this wall, just what is it likely to do for relations between Russia and Ukraine, and what is it likely to do with the whole situation?
Well, actually, we should understand that the reasons for the erection of the wall are monetary ones. That means it's a reason to use the budget money up to $3 billion that could be used to finance good guys, that means affiliated companies. So that means that a good reason to steal this money from the
budget.
But
wait, but coffers are empty, so they don't have money. So you say
yes,
you steal the wall.
Yes, that means that, but you can use credits, you can use other money, because you have a very important reason. And that means that this important reason can let you take money from other, well, means that are vitally necessary, but not so, could be claimed not so important. So just first of all, reasons, the monetary one and not the state one. So that means a group of interests are pushing this project, but not Ukraine itself. And we should understand this quite well.
It is called Eurowall. So do you think Europe would accept that?
I guess that Europe is going tired from Ukraine, Sam, and going tired more and more, obviously. And the last conference in Austria, when I have been 1 month ago, well, it was claimed that there is too much of Ukraine and too much of painful and unresolved problems, because Ukraine is useless. We can speak that European politics, first of all, are tired because of sanctions between Russia and Europe, and turn out diminished even for 20% for that spurious. And Ukrainian politicians are not so persuasive for Europe. That means the trust it starts to, well, not lost, but it diminishes. Mm. So it seems to me that this story won't last for long.
All right, well, let's hear from another guest, Sergei Stankevich, Russia's political and public figure and expert at Anatoly Sobchak Fund. Mr. Stankevich, can you hear us?
Yes, yes.
What, in your opinion, is this year plans for this so-called Eurowall likely to do in terms of trying to find solutions to this conflict in Ukraine?
Mr. Poroshenko's recent appeal to restore the national border sounds logical, but in practice it can be implemented only as part of a package deal to settle the whole political and military conflict in Donbass. to isolate this border issue from the rest of controversial issues. Now impossible, it will not work.
Mr. Sankevich, another controversy is over the issue of that non-aligned status of Ukraine. You know, this week, Verkhovna Rada, Ukrainian parliament, made moves just to abandon it and to proclaim that Ukraine wants to be part of NATO. How practical is this actually pledge, and what do you make out of that?
I think that this particular decision of the Ukrainian parliament is purely symbolic and has no practical content. I cannot even imagine any serious negotiations about Ukrainian participation in NATO in the foreseeable future. It would be better to forget this subject for 15 years at least.
But it seems that the new Ukrainian government are very keen to actually do this. Well, the Prime Minister, Arseniy Yatsenyuk, he unveiled the strategy for the next 2 years, and that includes, well, sort of trying to get into NATO. So, the Ukrainian government is actually trying to do this, even though, as you say, there's no chance.
This stage of the Ukrainian history for partially renewed Ukrainian elite, it's very important to make some symbolic gestures. But it would be much better for them to put more emphasis on practical economic reforms. Just recently, we heard that from newly appointed economic minister that the Ukrainian state is on the eve of bankruptcy. So it would be much better to be concentrated on these issues.
Red Line.
And let's go to our next guest, Vyacheslav Pozniak, head of Wider Europe Project in Minsk. Mr. Pozniak, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for taking me.
Well, as well as discussing the plans for the so-called Eurowall and Ukraine's been on the brink of bankruptcy, just let's talk about the actual Minsk Protocol and just where it is now. So are there any chances of the Minsk agreement still being in place now? What do you think are the chances?
I'm afraid one has to pronounce more than a couple of words. The Minsk process, I think, has stalled for a while. It is because it contains itself several other complex processes. I believe that the current stall may be explained by the fact that there has been a game changer, which has changed Moscow's position on the perspectives of the settlement. I believe that the new position voiced by Moscow, which may be briefly described as a return to the vision of both the Donetsk and Lugansk oblasts as parts of Ukraine, somehow puzzled the other parties of the Minsk process. Parts of the leadership of the self-proclaimed independent republics may disagree with that. On the other hand, Kyiv may feel uncomfortable with this idea because my impression that at least some parts of the Kyiv elite intended to use secession, possible secession of these two oblasts, so as to emburden Russia both with economic and lots of other political and trade difficulties, like continued sanctions, pressure, criticism, and so on and so forth. So the change in the agenda, which was initiated by Moscow, probably with some sort of concern or bargain saint, together with the French president and some Western partners. So it puzzled the process to the Minsk process and stalled it for the time being. So time needs for adjustments, and then we'll be able to see how it can be jump-started. But there are no other mechanisms in place so far, so I believe to see the continuation of the settlement efforts.
Mr. Sankevich, do you agree with what Mr. Pozniak is saying, that witness a change of Russia's position? Do you agree with that?
I think that there is no real change, but it is a shift in the balance. There was two positions. One position was that we recognize the territorial integrity of the Ukraine. The other position was that we put great respect to the people's will of the self-proclaimed republics. Now the balance was shifted to territorial integrity, and it's good, to my mind. There is only one realistic option now. to recognize finally that Donbass can be only the autonomy part of the Ukraine, to call the new phase of the Minsk peace talks in the new format, +42. That means four international mediators, for example, Germany, France, Russia, Kazakhstan, plus the two sides of the Donbass conflict. This renewed peacemaking group can develop and implement a package agreement, including the recognition of the status of Donbass, the guarantees of its for its population, the demilitarization of the eastern regions of Ukraine, and, as Mr. Poroshenko asked for, the restoration of the Ukrainian-Russian border along its entire length. With a group of international mediators, it can be done in the foreseeable future. Otherwise, I doubt that it would be possible.
All right, well, thank you very much to our guest, Sergei Stankevich, Russia's political and public figure and expert at Anatoly Sobchak Fund, and Vyacheslav Bazniak, head of a wider Europe project in Minsk. Red Line. Well, let's go to our next guest, Thomas Heine, a political observer at Politiken Daily in Copenhagen. Mr. Heine, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Just what we've heard this week, they are discussing Ukraine's plans to build a Eurowall between Russia and Ukraine. What do you think about these plans? How is it seen from the European perspective?
Well, I certainly understand that Kiev wants to feel safe from Moscow. But on the other hand, I don't think that this wall will be very effective, especially not since a large part of the border is not controlled by Kiev itself, but by the separatists and by Moscow.
Mr. Heine, what about NATO membership bid? There's a lot of talk over that Ukraine abandoning that non-alignment status. So how practicable is this issue for Ukraine?
It is highly unlikely that Ukraine will become a member of NATO anytime soon. Again, I mean, understandable that Ukraine is looking for some kind of security guarantees, but they will obviously not be forthcoming from NATO, neither from Europe, neither from the U.S. And in that respect, I'm not sure it's very wise for Ukraine to give up declare that it's giving up its non-declared status. And I also think that it seems to me that it was against the wishes of President Poroshenko.
And as well as obviously like the NATO membership and this Eurowall, another big issue that Ukraine is facing is its economic issues, I guess. And just how wise it is to at this time when the economy is on the brink of bankruptcy, really, is how wise it to plan to spend some $500 million on building a wall?
Well, again, I mean, unless Ukraine can feel secure, its economy won't revive either. I mean, basically, Ukraine needs every dollar or every hryvnia it can save. But at the same time, Ukraine has considered itself to be under threat from Moscow, having seen part of its country annexed by Moscow, Crimea, and another part, you have an uprising which is seen as supported actively by Moscow. And in this situation, I think that the leadership in Kiev thinks that it needs to take security seriously and spend money on defense that would otherwise have been spent on social issues and other reforms.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your interesting analysis, Thomas Heine, political observer at Politiken Daily in Copenhagen. And thank you to our other guests, Vyacheslav Bazniak, head of Wider Europe Project in Minsk, and Sergei Stankevich, Russia's political and public figure and expert at Anatoly Sobchak Fund. And thank you to our guest in our studio, Kirill Koktish, associate professor at Moscow State Institute of International Relations with Russia's foreign ministry. And still to come in our program, François Hollande opening window to Russia. French President François Hollande brushed off long-standing dispute with Russia, paying a surprise visit to Moscow to discuss thorny issues of Moscow's relations with the West at an eye-to-eye meeting with President Putin. The move highlighted Mr. Hollande's ongoing efforts to play a peacemaker with Moscow, contrary to the growing hard line taken by German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Stay with us.